This episode of The Matt Report is brought to you by Malcare. You can find Malcare at malcare.com. It's the only WordPress security plugin with instant WordPress malware removal. Our auto clean feature cleans your website without waiting hours or days. It just gets rid of it automatically. It's magical. It's auto magic. Malcare.com. I don't know anyone who enjoys having to worry about getting your website hacked, getting your client's website hacked, getting that website you built for a nonprofit as a friendly signal during this whole COVID time, and all of a sudden their website's hacked, and you're like, oh God, I just did that work for free. Now I have to go in and fix this too. I don't have the time or the wherewithal to figure this stuff out. Don't worry, Malcare will do that for you for $99 a year for one site. It'll automatically clean that stuff out. It does automatic daily malware scanning. It does smart website firewall protection, login protection. You know, it's all the stuff you don't want to deal with in the security realm of a WordPress site. Check them out. Malcare.com. Malcare.com. Thanks for supporting the show. Welcome back to another episode of the Matt Report podcast. Thanks for tuning in nearly every week and staying connected to, well, mattreport.com/subscribe. And hey, look, if you have a moment, please drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. It's the lifeblood of the show. Well, right next to all of you fantastic listeners that send me tweets and DMs. Look, I'm always looking for the next great story, so keep them coming. I love talking to that resilient business builder, and today's guest fits that persona, well, perfectly. I mean, he's running buildupbookings.com. It's a vacation rental marketing and SEO agency amidst a global pandemic. Not only is he figuring out how to survive in this new normal, but he brought on two new team members at the top of 2020 and just made an acquisition of a productized service called guesthook.com. It's a service that focuses on creating copywriting for the vacation rental industry. So we're going to talk about what it's like to be a small boutique agency acquiring another business in this space with the world on lockdown, if you can believe it. His name is Conrad O'Connell. He's been on the show before, and I'm excited to have him back to talk about this new chapter. Let's get into the show.
I first started doing SEO. Really, my first job out of college was actually at a small marketing agency. At the time, we worked with any sort of client, but over the years, I have found the specialty in travel, and more specifically in accommodations slash, like, you know, think of hotels, resorts, vacation rentals are a lot of our clients. And I know in the past, we've chatted about SEO and WordPress kind of being a common tool, you know, WordPress being the CMS that we're using on a lot of our client sites. Yeah, so this is, I guess, year probably 7 of my supposedly my marketing career. And really, SEO is an important piece, I think, that whole time. A lot of clients come to us needing help with that. Certainly, we offer other things as well, but that has always been what I've been interested in and therefore focused on for the past, you know, half decade plus.
I'm interested to get into talking about how this whole Guesthook acquisition came about, but curious, and maybe this is a part of it, like, what is this world like for you in a COVID economy, if you will, right? I mean, people, less travel, less bookings. I'm sure you're looking at it like, am I burning this whole thing down now or later? Like, give us the insight to that.
Yeah. I mean, if we did this, if we had this conversation back in the spring, I suppose that would sound a lot more melancholy or upset. No, I mean, the spring was brutal for a lot of our clients. I can't lie. Certainly when things were locked down, I think that, you know, there was a lot of local restrictions put in place for a lot of clients we work with, where in some cases they couldn't even rent to anyone, you know, period, except for maybe, I think there was exceptions carved out in some destinations that we work in for, like, healthcare workers actually traveling to that destination. They could stay in a vacation rental. Obviously, that's not a really the target market here, if you will, right? It's mostly leisure travel. A lot of our clients are in your typical, you know, beach or mountain getaway type destinations. So yeah, the spring was very hard for a lot of our clients, especially when it came to restrictions. I think a lot of those restrictions had very logical reasons behind them. I'm certainly not complaining, but it's just a, you know, the matter of how things played out. Many of our clients, we had a client actually that had $100,000 in canceled reservations every day for 8 straight days. So they, when all was said and done, they had $1 million in canceled revenue that they weren't sure was going to come back. And almost the health of their business was at risk in a pretty significant way because of all the lost revenue. And, you know, obviously they still have other expenses and people that they're paying and stuff like that. So COVID early in the spring was not kind to the vacational industry. I think as lockdown started to lift, it was actually kind of this seesaw effect where things went from very, you know, empty and canceled and very perhaps pessimistic thoughts to the other way, where when people did, you know, start to travel again, they favored some of the clients that we work with, the destinations that they have, where they wanted to travel and stay, for example, in a secluded remote cabin where they weren't around anyone else. So yeah. There were some destinations that actually have had their best year ever, again, yo-yoing from a horrible year now to their best year ever, partially because of these restrictions. And I think when all is said and done, the vacation rental kind of inventory in particular will end up having a good year in most destinations. Now there's exceptions, Hawaii being an obvious example. People don't really want to fly there, but for your, you know, travel to, drive to type destinations, it will end up being a good year because of that type of accommodation is now favored over a hotel, resort, or getting on an airplane.
I know we're still like looking at the light at the end of the tunnel and going into the holiday season, of course, there's all the headlines of how much the virus is increasing, et cetera, but is it fair to say that even for your clients, those that could stick through it, the ones that weren't getting financially devastated by this lockdown, was there some new opportunities unearthed throughout all this to rejigger their brand and really hunker down on marketing and keyword focus? And I guess, was there anyone coming out of this going, okay, once we get to the other side, even if it's somewhere in the middle, at least we can get hyper focus on something else and cut all the fat?
I think some people have that point of view, in particular when it comes to like promoting in markets that they might not have focused on previously. We work with kind of a golf resort in North Carolina, and you know, they had their drive to market that they'd always focused on over the years, and then they found that drive to market expanded itself into states where the lockdowns were more severe. They were willing to come and travel into North Carolina, so they were able to, we were able to target more on the Google Ad side, to be honest, some of our campaigns into those different markets and say, okay, we're willing to spend more in these areas of Virginia that typically haven't driven much traffic because of the fact that people are willing to drive down to this resort because it's slightly less restrictions. The golf resort being a pretty socially distance, I guess, friendly vacation, are far spread out rather on a golf course. So things like that, I think, were learnings that probably we can hopefully take with us in the future. Yeah. In other cases, I think there's demand that will eventually go away, to be candid. So it's like, another client that we work with has seen a huge influx of travelers coming from Atlanta because of what I mentioned a few minutes ago, where they're not able to fly, they're not able to go anywhere else, so they're driving from this market. And that demand is very strong right now, like off the charts strong. But I also think that in the future, maybe that would actually go away. So their business actually now is better than it has been in the past, and then it might return to a more normal level at some point in the future.
Yeah. So, I mean, like a perfect example would be, you know, me and my family, we normally go to Florida at the end of the summer, like into the Labor Day weekend. Of course, we didn't go this year. We didn't fly down, but we did just my wife and kids. We went up to New Hampshire, right? It was just something. It was like, okay, so since we're not flying, we're driving, you know, and we're going to drive somewhere regional. And it's while it was still a 4 or 5 hour drive, it's these types of things that maybe you're seeing an increase in because now, hey, the road trip is back.
Yeah, exactly. Even my wife and I, we took a road trip, same thing, immediate family type trip, 6 hours, 7 hours over to this destination that I'm talking about, Blue Ridge, Georgia. Had a great time, just stayed in the cabin. And just getting out of the house, I think, is something that we all want to do. Lockdowns or no lockdowns, even just being in a different environment, I think is a good thing, even if, especially if you can do it in a safe way, which I think there's ways to tackle that. There's ways to approach that where you're not necessarily exposing yourself or other people to any sort of virus risk or anything like that. So yeah, that demand, that's what saved the season for a lot of these clients, is exactly what you just described. You know, that drive to sort of getaway type thing with the immediate family has been good for a lot of folks.
Whenever I think of SEO, I always like envision the early 90s, late 80s, stockroom floor, right? The traders running everywhere, ticker tapes, paper flying everywhere. Like, oh, it's all this hysteria, right? Because you're tracking keywords and you're watching trends and there's like a lot of commotion. Was it like that sort of same feeling when COVID hit, like keywords dropping, other keywords rising from a data point of view, that you were like, wow, this is a little bit of chaos here, but I'm thriving in this. I like absorbing all this information.
Yeah, for sure. So it's funny because like the rankings will be flat. We'd look at rank reports and it would say like, here, you know, client A, you still rank in this position for this keyword, which you've ranked, you know, pretty similar, maybe a spot above, a spot below for years now. Oh, but the volume is down 90%, right? Like I've never seen anything like that.
Right.
Some of the clients we work with are in like larger ski markets out in the West Coast. So we have a client that's in a Colorado ski market. and the demand just literally evaporated. Like, I don't want to say it just went down. I mean, it literally went from like hundreds, if not thousands, of searches a day for lodging vacation rental terms to zero, like 10 overnight. Wow. And the people that were searching were actually looking for like, oh, am I still allowed to, you know, travel to this destination or not? And so, yeah, we had some extreme examples of not so much the ranking shifting, but rather the search demand just massively, massively going down in some markets. Again, I'll mention Hawaii as another example. And then the flip side of it, right, where these we have a hiking guide that we did for a client, which is something that people might search, places to go hiking near Boston, right, or something like that. These pages were getting a few hundred visitors in the pre-COVID world, and then all of a sudden, the demand is just off the charts. So it ranked in the same spot, right? So our rank tracker would say, oh, you ranked number two for, you know, places to hike near destination. And then the traffic to that page went up 400, 500, 600% year over year.
Yeah.
Because of all these search trends changing. So yeah, that was an immediate thing that we could tell pretty quickly, was that people were searching for, of course, COVID related information. They were also searching for things like, you know, are restaurants open in this destination? Can I go to the beach at some point? Here on the East Coast, many of the beaches were actually locked down. You couldn't go. So we created a lot of pages and a lot of content around that for our clients that were sticking with us through this time. And we ended up getting tons of traffic and, you know, some conversions from creating some of that very timely, like informational content for sure.
Do you think that there's going to be, and maybe you're already seeing it, and maybe this just the stuff doesn't work like this, but I just know like the amount of work it takes to get high value pages ranked, you know, at the top spots of Google, the effort that it takes, you know, the tremendous amount of links and just work and content and thought process. Does a lot of this stuff sort of break apart through all this? And will people just return to their rankings in the future when everything sort of kicks back in for your industry? Or is that now there new work to be done to reclaim those spots?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think some people weren't very nimble, to be honest with you. We saw some of our competitors and some client destinations that I know are good marketers. You know, I got inside information from other people in the industry that they like laid off their agency, which I get it. I mean, you have to protect your own business, right? You can't keep paying an SEO agency when your bookings are down 90% for sure. But yeah, some people just sat on their hands and didn't do anything. I think they missed out on a lot of traffic, but you know, to be fair, I do understand why they did that in some cases. But then yeah, when are things going to return to normal? Will some of these search trends stay? I think so. I think it's so case by case though. Like we even saw that where one piece of content in one market would work well, that same sort of topic, you know, in another market or destination for us didn't work well. So it's hard to predict, to be honest. I've been wrong a lot this year, so it's hard for me to rub a crystal ball when I've proven time and time again this year that I think I'm wrong. Like a good example of that, kind of an adjacent industry, not one that I've spent much time in, is I'm like, no one's ever going to get on a cruise ship again. Like after COVID, like the fear, the concern of virus transmission on cruise is going to be so high that no one's ever going to do it. Then I started reading articles on Skift, which is one of my favorite news sites to read about travel, that like a lot of these cruises that they were forced to cancel, it was like high 80, 90% of people that had these reservations were like, no problem, just move my reservation to next year. And I'd be like, no way, like they're going to ask for a refund, like they're going to be upset, they're going to never want to get back on a cruise ship again. And most of those cruisers, I don't know the right term for it.
You know, what are they called?
Yeah, I don't know. But they were like, no problem. We understand. We'll go again next year, or give us a site credit or like company coins and we'll come back. And when it's safe, we'll go again. Things like that shocked me, you know? So that's what I mean by my predictions haven't always turned out to be true.
Yeah. I mean, I've only been on a cruise once in my life, and I just can't think that these cruises are great for the environment. I mean, I just look, I mean, just the sheer size of a boat, the fuel and the food that is consumed and thrown away is astonishing to me. And I don't think I could ever go back. After I saw it, I was literally like, what are we doing with all this food alone? Right? I was just, it blows my mind.
Yeah. Not my area of expertise, but I'd have to agree 100%.
Yeah, I mean, wow. So here you are amidst the pandemic, amidst uncertainty with your customers. I mean, you were probably very busy, but a scary busy. And all of a sudden, this guest hook acquisition comes along. How did it come about? And how did you sort of break that ice? Or was it just this cordial thing between colleagues?
Yeah. So I guess the relationship started some time ago. I've actually ordered from Guest Hook for our clients before. So the original co-founders of the company, Jessica Vozell and Andy McNulty, they both, I've met them at many conferences. And, you know, I want to say we became at least friendly for sure, just dealing with perhaps horror stories of certain clients or certain projects being tough or even sending referrals back and forth. So There was even talks some time ago about some sort of partnership, formalizing it and so on. I think how it started was just an email from, I think, Andy originally, although Jessica was certainly part of that process. They co-founded Guesthook. I think back in 2015 was when they started the company. And they've always had this niche that I was always interested in, which was this copywriting and particularly writing descriptions for these vacation rental, you know, type clients that we've been talking about so far today. So they reached out and they let me know what was going on, which was that, you know, they wanted to, the business, COVID wasn't kind to their business, makes a lot of sense why that's the case. And they were looking to potentially, you know, move on and shift away from it. And would I be interested in acquiring it? Just started with that very informally, them reaching out with an email and then following it up with a call, a Zoom call to go over what they were sort of interested in. So that was the start of it.
And I'm very used to like hearing either other podcasts and having other people on my show talk about valuations. And of course, everyone's always excited when it's like a SaaS business, recurring revenue, plugins for WordPress that have, you know, whatever, 100,000 active installs, and there's ways to monetize it through the dashboard of WordPress. Right. When they came knocking, did you already have the sort of prowess to evaluate a company like this? Or did you turn to somebody? I'm curious how you disseminated all of that.
Yeah, it's funny because I think I've read and I'm always interested in those topics as well, but I've never done it. So I was very green behind the ears, never really bought anything other than some small sites that really had minimal revenue. I was buying them more for the domain names. So, and I've also bought some domain names as well, but that's really just, you know, can we agree on the price? There's really not much calculation right, going yeah. on there, right? Yeah, so it was difficult. I think a lot of it was just based on, you know, personal feel or preference of what I think the business could grow back to. Obviously, there was a period of expansion early on in the company's history. They were very open and, you know, honest with their books and their numbers and where they got to revenue wise. And then of course they were honest and open about where things had fallen, unfortunately. So it was kind of tough to come up with a number, to be honest with you, because I don't think you could take the last 12 months, you know, come up to that number, multiply it by, you know, I know it's common to multiply something by three and then say, okay, well, here's the, you know, the yearly profit, let's multiply that by three, it's worth X. Because if we look at it 6 months prior, the number would be much lower. If we look at it the 6 months before that, it would have been significantly higher. So that made it tough. I think that was probably the reason why it maybe took a little bit longer to sort of come up with a value. They talked to other companies, which in fact, I encourage them to do. I was very candid with them. I haven't done this before. Here's a number I think is fair based on everything that we've chatted about. But you know, check me, like go. Like I said, we become friendly. So I even told them at one point, if they could get a better offer, a significantly better offer from someone else to take it. You know, I only have so much financial resources on my side. So I think we finally came back on a number that made sense for all of us based loosely on some of these things that we chatted about and sort of some projections on my side for how much could we grow the business when things are hopefully more back to normal in 2021, or at least what other services could we offer to potentially increase the revenue, things like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, services-based business, very hard because mostly for services-based business, especially if you're a boutique sort of outfit, you know, we're not talking mega brand here. We're talking people that have personal relationships with their customers and probably even like yourself, like, you know, your customers, they know you. And if all of a sudden, you know, Conrad's not in the game anymore, they're like, whoa, well, maybe I should put my chips with somebody else. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to predict. And like you said, that multiple of three, it's tough with a service-based business, right?
Yeah, I think it is tough. I think the one thing that worked in my favor in this case is that there was this, you know, network of contractors that had been fulfilling a lot of the copywriting. So it's a service business. It's a productized service in a way too, because you can just go on the website right now, hit a few buttons, register, and purchase a description for a flat fee. So it has that sort of element to it. And then person ultimately has to fulfill that work, a network of kind of these copywriters that Jess and Andy had assembled over years of running the business, 5 years. Those kind of people were able to sort of agree to come along in a way. It's not that I was taking on salaries or anything like that. It was just, are you still interested in, you know, working on these projects when they start coming back in again? And there was, you know, many of them were able to say yes. So I think that eased it compared to, like you said, where it's like they've had one point of contact. It's just that one person they're used to, which honestly, you know, is how my main business build up bookings works. I certainly have that kind of experience over there for sure.
And now is this for the service that they provide? You said that, you know, they write the descriptions and copy for vacation rentals and the like. Now, is this something that is you don't do this in your primary business, or you were using them and you were like, wow, I mean, this is a good fit because I'm actually paying them anyway. So let me just bring them under the umbrella. How different are the businesses or not?
Yeah, to be honest, I always thought it would be like inappropriate for me to offer that service in a way. So I will say we've done it a handful of times over the years, but like Jess in particular, the co-founder of the company, was so good at it that I would just almost send people over there. And I'm like, you know, we could do this. Obviously, we do a ton of content writing, you know, blog posts, long form informational pages, more from kind of the SEO perspective. But I think she has more of a creative streak in her, right? Where it's a little bit more of a flowery sort of language and copy in some cases to sell. You know, here's the property, here's what it has to offer, and so yeah. on. I didn't think it was my place to offer that service to publicly. I mean, we did it every once in a while when a client asked for it, but often we would just refer them over. And then when this opportunity came to like get what I was always interested in, it was, you know, it was easy for me to say yes and start that process, at least for sure.
That's a huge lesson. I mean, even, and I know you and I have had this discussion before, and it might be obvious to you and I, and maybe not to others, like when you're hyper-focused on your particular market in the SEO and marketing space, which is a pretty large, I mean, vacation rental and, you know, properties, those kinds of things. It's a big market, right? Maybe people hearing this is like, boy, it's a small market. Maybe I can niche down in this. It's still a pretty big market. And it's because of your efforts of only focusing on that. I mean, you're not going in and helping somebody rank a traditional, you know, e-commerce store that's selling widgets. Yeah. Yeah. It's no real question here. It's more of just like broad brushstrokes. But these are the things that when you're thinking about building a business, hyper-focused, and when you start to build relationships over time, like this is the glue that can keep things going, which is, you know, a testament obviously to your focus, but and their focus as well.
So I see this a lot. I've even been asked this before by different people where it's like, you know, they say, oh, I know a little bit about SEO, but I'm this broad generalist. Like you said, I'm going to go and focus on. This is just an example I've heard before. And if someone out there is listening, doing this, I'm not attacking you. This is just what I've heard. They're like, I'm going to go do dentist SEO. I'm going to become the best in the world at this. There's so many dentists across the entire country. My total addressable market of dentists that need customers is massive. And I can do SEO and I can just market them. And I see this, you know, with other industries. I mean, this is just one example. And then they do nothing to actually understand the company or the business, the industry itself. Right. They just, oh, I'm going to register like dentistseoexpert.com and, you know, try to do this marketing to these dentists without really understanding anything about what it's like to run a dental practice or something like that. So I think that I would just caution people against hearing, oh, you know, I'm going to specialize in X, whatever X happens to be, whatever industry. If they don't really understand it, if they don't really want to like focus on it, like, would you be happy being on the phone 6 hours a day with dentists talking about SEO? If not, probably don't do that.
Yeah,
and, you know,
yeah.
What are you bringing to the table that's actually a unique point of view? Like, is there actually something about your process or your service that helps this particular industry in particular? So yeah, I mean, the vacation rental industry, I think, is pretty large and it's growing. And there's plenty of companies in the space, much larger and much more successful than I am. So it proves that there's plenty of room to grow. But I think the whole specialist thing, I think people early on, they think it's like the Dunning-Kruger effect in a very real way. They think, oh, it's easy. I'm just going to do this SEO service for this particular industry. And then they get a few months in and realize, oh, wait, I actually have to like understand it and know how to market to these people, not just throw up a website or a landing page on a site that says, oh, I do, you know, SEO for this type of industry. So be careful of people falling in that trap.
So what does it look like for you now to, how long did the process take? You had the initial email. Did you go out and seek your own counsel and say, hey, I got this thing on the, or an accountant and get this thing on the books? Like, what do you think? And how long did that whole process take?
Yeah, I would say the whole process probably took 2 months. There's really only two kind of, I guess, you know, sort of questions on my side that dealt with other folks. So one was to the CPA, right? Here's what I'm planning on doing. How should I structure this? Should I take over their LLC or essentially acquire the assets and then dissolve it, which is what we ended up doing. And then the other was to a lawyer. And the lawyer was someone local, just someone that I wanted to look at the contract and make sure there was no like obvious missteps in there. He pointed out several things about it was actually the specifics escaped me exactly what he ended up changing, but there's probably three or four clauses that he made some adjustments to on here's a way that this will be more positive for you in the long run, or here's a way to phrase this so that if there is some sort of conflict, your ability to recover damages and stuff like that are lost. But I will say this, honestly, the fact that I was doing it with two people that I know, liked, and trusted probably made this a way smoother process than dealing with someone that's, yeah, I don't want to say like dishonest, but dealing with someone that's trying to maximize their end and isn't really having a relationship with you, I would imagine that's a lot tougher path to go down. So I think in that way, I was lucky/fortunate to deal with someone that was very open, honest, sharing all the numbers, sharing everything, you know, being candid with what's going to go on. And then, you know, the co-founder of the company kind of agreeing to stay on in a very small capacity for 6 months to smooth everything over and transition everything was the final piece that I think sealed the deal for me to get things done.
So you made the tweet that I saw anyway on November 19th, which was just a little week, week and a half ago-ish. Was that the 2 month end date right there? Was that day, was it you finalized it and you tweeted it out, or?
Yes, you know, we actually had to work on a new site, so a new WordPress site, as you would imagine. So it actually happened probably 2 weeks before that, but it's, you know how it cool. is to do a site, even a simple one, just a reskin takes at least 2 weeks even. If yeah. you're trying to push hard and get things done. So yeah, it was probably around the start of November when ink was dry, or digital ink was dry on documents, and checks were sent out right around that time frame.
And what does the plan look like going into 2021? Or are you mm-hmm. already going to kickstart doing a, I don't know, what I'll just call, for the sake of coming up with another word, like an upsell to your existing clients to say, hey, look, now we have these added services, and you just send on your MailChimp list and wait for the money to roll in to get that money back? Or what does that look like to introduce these services to existing clients and beyond?
I guess that's what I'm interested in. That's another reason I was interested in the business. It's not necessarily, you know, if these were two concentric circles or circles, a Venn diagram, if you will, I don't think they would just overlay. I think there's a lot of our current customers that might be interested in this, but I think there's this whole other group that we haven't really, you know, worked with or serviced before. We're already seeing it, you know, with the orders that we've done so far, that these types of people maybe never would have found us or never would have contacted us. They wouldn't have been interested in, you know, working with kind of an agency, if you will. They just need help. They need help with a specific service or a specific, you know, area of their business.
It's like the inverse, right? It's like that customer set of guest hook might be interested in your, you know, deeper services or more broad services.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I see overlap both ways, right? So I see some okay. people that we're already working with that might need this. And then I see some people who stumble their way into the guest hook site. They rank for very different sort of topics. They've been known for a very different service over the years that might end up finding us. But really, I see them as separate brands. So, you know, there was even a thought process early on, should I just like 301 the guest hook site, create pages on, you know, the build up booking site and just offer the same service, but rename it. And then I started doing research into how many like mentions, and if we want to get sort of SEO nerdy for a second, like how many links the guest hook site had that mentioned their name and their brand specifically. I came off that idea pretty early on, and I was like, no, this is its own thing. I'm going to run it yeah. like its own thing, at least for now. That could change in the future. If you're listening to this far in the future, I could change my mind. But certainly, like for, like you said, for 2021, that's the plan, is to run it separately. And if there's overlap, then I see a way to upsell, but I also see it as just its own unique offering that could stand on its own and have its ability to drive customers and drive revenue all on its own.
Did you have, or do you have employees or contractors in the main business?
Yeah. So I have three full-time people now. That's probably a shift from when we last chatted.
And then congratulations and not congratulations.
Yeah, I'm sure you know that feeling. That's been my timing on one or two of those was probably bad, given that it was sort of towards the start of 2020 and things went into lockdown. But shout out to the federal government for the PPP loans, I suppose, and a political statement, just something that helped me. So
you're going to asterisk everything.
Yeah. I'll just give thanks where it's due on that one. But so there was no full-time people coming over from the guest hook side. Like I said, just sort of a sort of collection of these freelancers. But the full-time people that I have already started doing some of these tasks on the guest hook side. So there's a little bit of overlap. And to be honest, I'm still working through the best way to, you know, manage that. Do I have different emails for everybody? You know, how separate do we want these brands to be? Is it just the front of the website and then we shift things later on? I'm still working through that. So I don't know if I have a great answer there, but definitely some manpower/womanpower behind the scenes to get things done for sure.
Do you feel any kind of pressure? Even though they are, you know, maybe contractors, I mean, you still have to get to know them. They have to get to your, I guess, work style or work ethic. Do you feel, you know, you're sort of doubling or maybe tripling that sort of responsibility of other humans to continue work, to continue the brand, to get them business so that they can, you know, get a paycheck, et cetera. Did you ever feel that? Did you ever feel like, I don't think I want to take this on because of that pressure?
I think I was aided significantly by the fact that things had slowed down so much before the acquisition, you know, that, you know, a lot of these freelancers understood like, hi, the travel industry is in upheaval right now. That's why we haven't sent you any projects in a few months, you know, but you know, here I am coming back in to see if I can, you know, bring you this sort of thing, you know, again, give you this sort of projects to work on again. And many of them were actually thrilled/excited and were, you know, eager to email me. You know, I just sent them all essentially a Calendly link and I was like, hey, if you're interested in kind of continuing your work with guest hook, you know, here's the background. I purchased it from, you know, from the co-founders. If you're still interested, cool. You know, let's chat and see if you're still you're a good fit for what we're trying to do moving forward. And then some people were like, no, I found other positions. One of them had taken a full-time position and didn't want to freelance anymore. That's perfectly fine. We can't expect everyone to come over. But I do, some of the ones that we've been working with so far have been phenomenal. They've done such great work. And I think that that speaks to like what I acquired. I acquired sort of like websites and traffic. I acquired a customer list, but I also did acquire these people that know this kind of service offering pretty well, and they were doing a great job at it. So I do want to give them more orders, and that's what I'm focused on through the start of next year, is like, how can I get to a certain number? I do have some targets. Let's get to this many per month, per week, so that those people, have things to work on. But luckily they do have other projects to where it's not their main source of, income coming in. So I did think that does give me a little less anxiety than if it was like, oh, I was getting all my income from this one thing and then you bought it. You basically have to keep me on, or you're being unfair to me. So I haven't felt that way.
From a business owner's perspective, do you feel like this is your, I don't want to say chance, because since the last time we talked, you've had three full-time positions come on board, but is this a path forward for you? At least you look at it, I know it's early days, as that next step to detach yourself from, doing the work and working in the business and going to work on the business and maybe leveling somebody up from the guest hook side to just maybe run and manage guest hook while you focus on growing. Is there another acquisition on the horizon if it comes your way?
I don't know about that. I mean, we'll see how this one goes, and maybe I make my money back before I decide to plunge more of it into something like this. But to your first question, I had a moment early on, actually, when the old site was still up and no one had really been told what was going on, that made me think that was possible. So you can actually, it's switched now to a different solution. But previously, going back to our WordPress kind of thread here, the site was on WordPress and you could actually just use Gravity Forms to purchase a description. There was there's a Stripe integration with Gravity Forms. I'm sure you've used it before. People listening have used it before. And you could just go on the site, the old site, guesthook.com, click two buttons and just put in your credit card and enter the information, right? They made it very simple to do that. And I think it was like the third day after kind of things had been moved over to me. And it was actually the day before I stayed up till 12 a.m. moving over all the Stripe keys and doing that and saying, just in case an order comes in, let me move all this over so the money goes to the right account. My account, right? And the next day I woke up and there was like a text from Stripe or a notification on my phone, like someone ordered two descriptions. And I was like an oh shit type moment, right?
Where what do I do now?
I was like, well, yes, we have to get the work done. Luckily I'd been intro to one, contractor already, and she was open and available to do the work. So that wasn't a problem. But it was that moment that you just mentioned of, wow, I didn't really do anything. I wasn't sitting there talking to the client. I didn't have to send a proposal. I didn't have to go through all this work. I didn't have to prospect this person. I didn't cold email them. I didn't reach out on LinkedIn like I do to be honest, a lot of the other stuff that I do on Build Up. And money came in. And then the assignment was given to the writer. She did a phenomenal job on it. And then the writer, less than what I got paid, obviously, there was margin in there. And then the customer was super happy with the order. And everything was pretty seamless. I was involved in the process for sure, but my time, investment in that process was so low that I had that moment, to be honest, of what you just mentioned of, I don't really need to be the person that's running that side of things, because it is the system that's somewhat, productized, certainly for these smaller orders, can be done with a lot of software tools and things that are running on WordPress. Some things are not, like SPP, that are making it just where I don't have to be involved in it anymore, but it's a business that can run without me. So that was a light bulb moment for me, because it gave me a first like little taste of what that might look like in the future. So
nice, man. Congratulations. It's a great feeling once you start getting into that space and really starts to open up. Like we were just talking about before with clients, you don't really know a space until you're, knee deep in it. And now, you get that little shot of adrenaline with money just came in and you're like, oh boy, what else can I do with this? how else can I get money in while I'm sleeping? Right. And then that whole thing starts coming up and you're like, ah, this is why people get so jaded in the passive income space. Right. Because it feels so easy, but there's such a long road to get to that point.
Yeah. Ignoring the significant amount of money it took to acquire the asset. Yeah. Yes. It was funny. I was like more excited than about the $400 that I made that day than the 4,000 that we built that week. But it was one of those situations where it has that feeling. I get it. I get why people get, I don't want to say addicted. That's a harsh word what we're discussing here, but I see the allure of these sorts of things. Once I got to really, live it and be like, oh wow, I made money without really having to, I don't want to say passive. I was certainly involved, but certainly the effort / time was much lower than what I'm used to. No doubt.
His name's Conrad O'Connell. You can check out his new business at guesthook.com. Conrad, thanks for doing the show today. It's always great to catch up and excited for everything you have going on and wishing you the best of luck. Where can folks find you to say thanks?
Yeah. So social media is a decent place where I spend too much time. Twitter probably being the top. So at Conrad O'Connell on Twitter. And then, yeah, if the incredibly small chance someone listening to this has a vacation rental, they need a description, please go to guestbook.com. You can go to the listing description page and order from there. And then our main agency is buildupbookings.com. So you can check us out in all those places. But if you want to talk to me, Twitter's the way to go. And go Pats, by the way, Matt.
That's right. Yeah, well, that's a whole other episode that we probably would never record and publish because this year is abysmal.
It's below average.
MattReport.com, MattReport.com/subscribe. Join that mailing list. Leave us a 5-star review in iTunes. Thanks for listening.